The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, a program designed to promote a positive work environment. Your hosts are Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. In this hour, you will be motivated to motivate, increase morale, productivity, loyalty, and reduce turnover. Learn how some companies get it while others don't. Now, here are your hosts, Roy and Max.
Welcome to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, the show that's all about building relationships, inspiring greatness, and creating a workplace where people can thrive. I'm Max Brown, along with my colleague and friend, Roy Saunderson, and we're from Rideau's Recognition Management Institute. Roy, another very interesting week today as we talk really about presence.
I know, and I think I see you smiling even through the lines here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I get excited about these things, you know.
Absolutely. So, I mean, we all know that there's a lot about, how we present ourselves in front of an audience, just even one-on-one. This is going to be an interesting show to take it to a different level, I think.
Well, and more importantly for me is that it's not just about how we say things, but how we present ourselves. And Christy Hedges, the author of The Power of Presence, Unlock Your Potential to Influence and Engage Others, has written a really great book on this topic. She's a serial entrepreneur, a communications expert and author, and sought-after leadership coach, and she runs her own coaching practice, The Hedges Company, and is a founding partner in the leadership development firm Element North. She writes about leadership for Forbes.com and penned the Leadership Factor column for Entrepreneur.com for more than 3 years. She's also been featured in publications as diverse as The Washington Post and Reuters, MSNBC, San Jose Mercury News, TheStreet.com, and numerous others. And she's been honored as one of the 50 women who mean business in Washington, D.C., and as an owner of the top 25 largest women-owned businesses by The Washington Business Journal. Christy, we're happy to have you on the show.
I am so happy to be here. Thank you.
Well, delighted. And actually, we found, although we didn't know in advance, that we've actually been through a common program together back in D.C. I'm really happy to have you here.
Well, thank you. And I'm so delighted to be in the conversation about presence, because I guess you can imagine, since I wrote a book about it, it's something I care about a little bit.
Well, and I really like how you wrote about it, and really great content. And to get right to it, why did you write this book, and why is presence so important?
Well, so, you know, it's a great first question, and you got to it a little bit in your introduction, in that, you know, we hear this term presence bandied about, and in corporate circles, we hear it called executive presence, and it's becoming a much more sought-after characteristic in hiring and in promotion in organizations. And yet we don't understand it very well. We know intuitively that it has a lot of impact on how people perceive us. We can certainly see other people's presence readily. I call ourselves presence voyeurs. I mean, we're always observing other people's presence, but we can't quite get a handle on it ourselves. And when we try to get a handle on it, we just go to these outside characteristics and traits like speaking skills or how you command a meeting. And that's a part of it, but it's certainly not all of it. And so I really set out to define it in a way that we actually could take action against it and see ourselves differently and then see opportunities for improving ourselves in that arena.
And specifically, you did this with a model that you've termed iPresence, correct?
That's right.
So tell us a little bit about each of those.
So iPresence, it's really the culmination of my entire career history, to be quite honest, and hopefully not overreaching here. But I started my career in politics, and so that was a great training ground for presence, because, you know, a candidate's presence is something that's talked about, it's polled about, it's a news story. it's out in front. And so you get a lot of data around presence in that arena and that environment. Now, you know, if you go into the corporate world, you get no data around presence, and it's something we don't talk about very easily. And so as I, in my career, I got out of politics. I started one of the first technology PR firms here in the Washington, D.C. area, and I had this opportunity to work with so many leaders around these ideas of presence, and sometimes they were called other things like communication skills, or you know, sometimes lumped into leadership skills, sometimes called charisma. But it was the same type of thing, and I was starting to then you know see these trends where people would try to change behavior, but it would not be sustainable, or they would try to change one part of a behavior, but there was a long tail of other stuff that needed to be addressed behind that behavior. And so when I sold my company and became a leadership coach, of course, as we talked about Georgetown earlier, that opens a whole other lens as how we look at behavior and what is behind mm-hmm. someone's presence. And so really iPresence came from the culmination of all those experiences and finding tools that actually worked for clients that they could use. And so the parts of iPresence are intentionality, building individual connection, and then building inspiration, being an inspirational force. And so that's how I classified it and started working on it. And it really, it was a practical tool. There were a series of practical tools that people could use, and that seemed to be sustainable, and I saw action from, and that's really where it started.
And while they might seem like very common sense on the face of all three of these words, the depth with which you speak about them in the book is actually very enjoyable. I read the book and enjoyed it very much. And so if you'd indulge me a bit, I'd like to get into each one of them throughout the show and kind of develop more about each one of these topics.
Well, sure. Let's go.
Excellent. And to use your words, to start with intentionality, you said that we need to use your words, you said being intentional is really, really important as a leader if you want to have presence. Can you elaborate on what that means, and where do we really begin?
Well, so with if you think about how presence is generally used as a leader, it's either underused, it's misused, or it's ill-used.
Yep.
And so that's why intentionality is so important, because we have to, when we bring intention to something, it changes our behavior, it changes what I call micro actions and macro actions. So the micro actions are as small as body language or your facial expression or how you orient your body towards someone, how you, you know, walk into a room. And then macro expressions would be, you know, do you show up someplace? Do you go in the first place? What kind of reactions do you have once you're there? So much of our life is unconscious, and we talk as a coach about how much narrative is in our head all the time, and that narrative shows up. And so part of being intentional is to understand what the narrative is that's there that's either helping or hurting our presence, and to put a more constructive narrative in place that we believe and that we can get behind, and let that come out through our presence. Because if you have the same narrative and you're trying to, you know, change your outward manifestation, your outward expression of that, it's very difficult to affect, and it's impossible to sustain.
And to elaborate, from the book you actually wrote that great intentions create great reactions. And so say more by this. So basically you're saying if we start in the right place, so it's a motive check for people mm-hmm. as well, isn't it?
Well, your presence are really your values worn on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are looking at your presence, and it may be what you want, and it may not. But they're making conclusions based on those anyway. And so if you want to start a virtuous cycle, you need to start with your intention going into it. So, you know, I'll give you an example that I talk about frequently. It was with a client many years ago, and she is a CEO of a technology company.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a new company in that they'd been around for a while, but they hadn't landed their first big customer. And so she was telling me that, you know, they were in this bidding process to win this, you know, this huge, to capture the whale, right, to really win the big one. And she was very nervous, and she was with her team getting ready to go in and pitch the client, and she was out in the hallway. And she said she realized that her unconscious intention going into that meeting was, we're not ready for this. We're not ready for this. So you can imagine what kind of outcome that intention creates.
Sure.
And so she said, in that moment, you know, and luckily we had been coaching around this, she said, I stopped myself and I realized I needed a better intention to create the outcome I wanted and the one that I believed, right? They have to be something you believe. And she said, I realize my intention should be, we deserve this.
Mm-hmm.
We deserve it. And it's a powerful twist. And so some people might say, well, that's just the thoughts in your head. Why does that matter? Well, again, they mm-hmm. matter because they show up.
Yeah, they do show up, right? That's the part that I don't think people talk about enough.
Yeah.
This idea, you know, that what we think actually does show up on our body. And I love how you described it with, you know, our values are basically, our presence is the values that are shown on the outside.
Yeah, it's
great.
And there's a couple exercises in the book that I use to help people really get in touch with what they want their presence to represent from a value standpoint. And this is a great check-in to do, you know, even if you've ever done this kind of work before in your life, because they do change somewhat. I mean, there's not a wholesale change every month, but over the course of many years, especially when you have profound experiences in your lives, you know, you really got to get clear about what values do I want to represent. Mm-hmm. And I have an exercise in the book, and this comes out of my good PR and marketing training, actually, is how to create something you can remember in a soundbite type of way, so that you can keep it front and center, so when you're in those moments and you're trying to figure out how do I want to show up here, you have it, mm-hmm. you have it close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's actually a good check-in to be reminded of on a regular basis, as opposed to just kind of taking it for granted if we assume that, oh, I've already got that part taken care of, right? But regularly checking in to say, okay, so what are my intentions? How are they impacting my body language? Why is this important? Because people can see it. It's as clear as whether we have a smile on our face, which is part of this conversation as well, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and I tell people smiling is so easy. You know, it's one of the simplest things that you can affect. But if you look at what draws us to other people, it is a warm, approachable expression. And that
yeah.
usually is a smile.
And
so much of the time, if we have worries or concerns in our head, they show up on our face. And you know, there's the great researcher Paul Ekman, who was made famous in the book Blink, but certainly has his own fame in his scientific circles. I interviewed him at one point, and I mentioned him in the book, and he's got some great research about how we have these micro expressions that show up beyond the conscious level. You know, if you're making it with me, Max, I can't even tell you what it is. My mind can pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
So very important to get inside your head first.
Yeah, and let's talk about that for just a little bit longer. Why is body language so contagious? And you mentioned why smiling is good, but why is it so important?
Well, you know, so there's some great research by David Rock, who wrote many, many great books, but he does a lot of work in neuroleadership and started the Neuroleadership Institute, which is really the application of neuroscience into the leadership realm, and you're seeing that
mm-hmm.
take off in many great ways. I'm sure you've talked about it on your program. And he has... you know, some ways of looking at you know, how we what triggers us, right? What gets in our way from a neuroscience point of view. And he has this model called SCARF, and part of that research is that when we meet someone for the first time, we automatically put them into one or two categories, into a friend category or a foe category. And so that's important in a lot of ways. One of the ways that's important is they know from brain scan technology that when someone's in a foe category and they speak to us, one part of our brain lights up. And when they're a friend and they speak to us, another part of our brain lights up. The same part of our brain that lights up when we talk to ourselves.
Fascinating, isn't it?
It's so we literally don't process that friend versus foe the same way mentally. So if you think you walk into a room full of strangers, what is one of the first things
yeah.
that puts someone in the friend category?
Yeah.
Smile.
Absolutely. And when you think about it from that neural perspective, if I'm thinking about someone as a foe and they say something, I doubt them, I'm cynical, I question their motives, and they might not deserve any of that, but that's the filter I'm using.
That's exactly right. And so a smile is simple, and when we get nervous, smile is the first, or anxious, or stressed, or whatever
yeah.
you want to call the emotion, the smile is the first thing to go.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I don't want to be Pollyanna about it. A smile doesn't solve everything, but it's certainly one of the easiest things you can affect, and it has a lot of ramifications.
Well, well said. Christy, we have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation and dive into some of the other aspects of why this is so important around presence. For our listeners, this is Max Brown and Roy Saunderson with our guest today, Christy Hedges, and you're listening to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio on the Voice America Business Channel. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be.
Listen anywhere.
Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. I'm Roy Saunderson, along with my friend Max Brown, and our guest today, Christy Hedges, the author of The Power of Presence, Unlock Your Potential to Influence and Engage Others. Fascinating topic. I love the discussion you're having there with Max. And I wonder if we could just shift now to that second part of your iPresence model, the individual and forging relationships. And where do people start to get this together?
Well, you know, so when you think about the importance of the individual connection piece, to presence. So, you know, often, again, when we think about we're going to change our presence, we start about how am I going to change, you know, my power or my assertiveness or my confidence. And really, there is no presence in terms – another person won't interpret our presence in a positive way unless they feel an individual connection to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so that connection piece is vital. And, you know, often we'll do this exercise in workshops where we'll say, well, you know, list – the top five qualities of the best person that you've ever worked for, the best boss you've ever had, and how many of those are a competency and how many of those are a connection point. And the ratio is generally four connection points to one competency point. So for all of this talk about, you know, people having to have like the best expertise or the best functional competency, what really makes us want to follow somebody, what makes us want them to be, for us to want them to be our leader, we need to feel some connection to them. And that's really about, it's about building empathy and it's about building trust. And those are two terms that are, you know, you can't really argue against them, but when it comes down to it, you get to brass tacks, how do you actually build more of that, especially when it's either lacking or you don't know the person that well?
I agree. And I saw an interesting definition about behavior, which is just a nice combination of definition words. It was said that it was the result of the interaction between what we believe and how we feel. And I found it timely that we were talking with you this week because I found that presence was very much that interaction between our beliefs and how we feel. Do you see it that way as well?
I do. And I think, you know, I often say that, you know, and this is, I'm not the first one to say this by any means, but it's that, you know, we remember how people make us feel, not what they said. And so when you think about your personal connection with somebody, it's really about what energy are you bringing to them that changes their perspective, that changes the way they feel in a positive way. You know, are you filling their cup or are you taking something out of it? And presence from that connection point, you know, often when people, because I do, you know, a lot of work in the corporate setting, people will think that that presence is going to come, that connection is going to come with a job title. And, you know, if I just get the manager title, if I just get the president title, if I just get the CEO title, then people will want to follow me. And, in fact, it's not about the title at all. It's about the individual connection that people feel with you. And this has to be achieved in large organizations, even if they don't know you personally.
Right. Go ahead.
No, and that's, I think that's one of the primary struggles of leadership is how do you do that?
All right. So you deal with lots of large organizations and the leaders within them, a lot of virtual connections these days. How do you get that kind of connection that you're talking about in this more virtual world that we live in?
Well, so I think that is one of the rising complications in organizations today, and you're spot on to bring it up because it comes up in every single workshop that I do. And, you know, there are a couple ways that we feel that connection with people, and primarily it's because we feel that we know them in some way and they know us and have our best interests at heart, and that's really that empathy piece, that there's a sharing that's going on back and forth. And virtually that can be difficult because we, you know, the best thing you can do with a virtual team is if you have any budget to get together early.
Right.
Because that face-to-face, if you have it, you'll remember it, your brain registers it, and, you know, when you're on the phone with somebody, you literally conjure up their face and their expressions when you're talking to them. If you don't have that in the beginning, you're missing a lot of those cues that can be very helpful. So I tell people to start there. You know, there's that great expression that the currency of love is time. You know, so in work,
yeah.
I would say the currency of leadership is interaction. And you have to find those times and those ways to interact, and the more casual, the better. And so that's where some of the new technologies are really helping us. So video conferencing is becoming more common, and there's all kinds of easy ways to do that through Skype or whatever your company has.
Right.
There's instant message. There are all the internal Facebook types of applications that create that informal feel of touch, and that's really important. And it's important because when we're in those virtual environments, our tendency can be to hide behind our email or hide behind the next scheduled conference call, and that's exactly the opposite of what we should be doing.
Great, great. Wow, this is powerful. Now, but isn't there a case where you actually have to be more transparent, almost more vulnerable, to create this kind of individual presence?
Yeah, and so one of the things I talk about in the book, and this really was a lesson out of politics, was that the whole idea of presence is a combination of competency and vulnerability. What creates presence, I should say, competency with vulnerability, both together, both important. And so, you know, the competency piece, well, we probably know that, right? We have to show that we're good at what we do and we're effective. The vulnerability piece is the one that's a little less intuitive unless you think about it. So vulnerability is that feeling of humanness that we want someone to have, of humanity. And so in politics, the example that I use is that when we would have a political candidate, you know, who was running for office, the hardest ones were the ones who were perfect, the perfect candidate, the one who had, you know, no struggles, perfect family, gone to a great school, great job, meteoric rise, beautiful family, no issues. They were very difficult for voters to connect with, even if their background were the same.
Okay.
What was much easier for voters to connect with if there had been a struggle, if there had been something about them that made them human. So they can be successful now, but if they had something they had overcome. So a lot of our work was trying to find these ways for voters to connect with the candidate as a leader. The same thing it plays out in any organization. I mean, good leaders will tell you that you have to show a little of yourself. You got to let your guard down, right? You have to show people that sometimes things are hard and you struggle too. Use your own stories. Don't leave them, you know, boxed up someplace. Bring them out and show people what you were going through when you were in their position. You have to be competent, too, right? That's why they're in tandem.
Yeah.
You can't be, you know, of course, we know what all weakness looks like, and we know what too much strength looks like. It's really the combination.
Wow. And that happy. So how do you kind of create that balance? How do you recommend and coach your leaders to create that balance?
Well, you know, I mentioned storytelling, and that's one way that it can happen, and you can certainly have people orient towards you in a different way. You know, we all carry around these stories, and they're incredibly powerful. We know all the brain chemistry stuff about how humans retain stories. We're built to be storytellers, and through much of our evolution, that's how we've passed on information. We're very good at it. But, you know, when, you know, modern day, you get into a situation, and most people will say, well, I don't want to, you know, nobody wants to hear that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody wants to hear what happened with me when I was 30, you know. Well, they do, because it's very instructive. And so one is being able to bring more of that into the workplace in a strategic, intentional way. Right? We're not, you know, asking someone to just start all of a sudden telling stories that don't go anywhere, because we know what that feels like, too. But to be very strategic about it, you know, that's important. To think about, you know, what is your display of empathy? How do you communicate empathy? Not do you feel it, because sure, we all feel it, but how does that come out in terms of your listening skills, in terms of your ability to acknowledge people, in terms of your ability to relate and show, again, you know, stories may be one way to do that, of what you've done that translates to what they're doing.
Well, I'm curious. Mentioning stories,
mm-hmm.
can you give an example of someone who demonstrates this whole concept of presence that would resonate with our audience, do you think?
Yeah, well, so, you know, one of the stories I have in the book is Ted Leonsis, who is a hero here in Washington, D.C. I don't think I'm overstating that too much. He's the owner of the Washington Capitals, who are not currently playing, but we hope to be playing someday soon.
Mm.
And he, you know, he was one of the founders, or one of the original folks, I should say, on AOL, who he sold his company into AOL and became one of the early pioneers in the Internet industry. But he tells a great story of how he was, you know, had sold his company for, you know, tens of millions of dollars and was on a living high, you know, and was on a plane that almost crashed. And he had this whole reconciling of his life and looked at it and said, this isn't the life that I want to have.
Mm-hmm.
And so he used that opportunity to really be thoughtful and intentional about what he wanted from his life, and he had this Ted's List that he called it, and he put these goals that he had for his life. It was sort of like a bucket list, but it also had a lot of charitable endeavors in it, and one of them was own a sports team, which ended up coming true.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it was that kind of thing, and he ended up sharing it with his employees. It went on his website. He, you know, he's a prolific blogger and social media personality, and so it's well known. It, you know, even before any of that happened, though, his employees knew about it. He put it and shared it and put it out there widely, and it was very honest. And the story is very honest. And he ended up writing a book about it and going through that kind of thing. And so you feel like you really get a sense of understanding what he's about. I mean, Tony Hsieh's another example. I mean, his book he's very frank in that book.
Yeah, yeah. So it is that whole openness and sharing of one's life experience that creates the biggest connection.
It, you know, it really is, and I think it builds trust. We have to feel like we know someone to be able to trust them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even though I would say the all-business persona of decades gone by isn't in vogue anymore, you know, the authentic leader, there's a lot of discussion about authenticity at work. When you get into the actual workplace, there is still a lot of discussion about, well, I couldn't do that at work. You know, people don't, you know, I wouldn't bring, you know, separation of my personal life and my professional life is really important.
Yeah.
I don't like to discuss that stuff at work. I don't want people to know any weakness about me. I mean, it's still, you know, we may change it from a vision level in terms of what we expect, but day to day, there's still a lot of fear in the workplace about authenticity.
You're right. Well, we're certainly enjoying your presence today, Christy, and we're going to have to take a short break. But to our listeners, stay tuned and come right on back as we continue our discussion with our guest today, Christy Hedges, and the power of presence. For Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, I'm Roy Saunderson and Max Brown.
Stay connected.
Sign up for our newsletter.
Go beyond your favorite Voice America shows. Visit iRadioBlog.com.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Bob Pritchard has over 30 years of experience as a straight-talking business consultant and author working with some of the top Fortune 500 companies. Now he's come to the Voice America Business Channel to help you and your business. Tune in to the Bob Pritchard Radio Show for information about starting and successfully running a profitable business. From the movers and shakers to great marketing screw-ups, you can't afford to miss a single edition of the Bob Pritchard Radio Show. Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business. Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and myself, Max Brown. And, of course, our guest today, Christy Hedges. She's the author of The Power of Presence, Unlock Your Potential to Influence and Engage Others. Christy, I know that some of this might seem like common sense, and a lot of our listeners today are going, gosh, authenticity, yep, we've heard it. Emotional intelligence, yep, we should do it. Why is this still so hard to achieve? And frankly, I mean, some of these topics we've been talking about for decades, but they're still really, really needed in the workplace.
Well, I think it's hard to achieve because, number one, we don't know how to do it in a strategic way. And there aren't a lot of practical guides for, you know, how do I actually, in a meeting, become, you know, better aligned with my values, intentional about what I want to do, authentic to who I really am, and still succeed and get the promotion, right? And best my competition or whatever the case is, right? And so that was one of the main goals of the book, was to really bring some of these ideas to a practical level and to make them accessible. Because I think there's a need for that, and I certainly have seen that in my coaching. But I think it's tough because there's a lot of fear with this. I mean, it's personal stuff. So even though on an intellectual level, when we look at leaders that we admire, both inside our companies or in the larger environment, we can see authenticity in them. It's a leap of boldness for us to show it in ourselves.
Boy, that's a big, big point. And yet at the same time, so there's maybe this lack of confidence around ourselves, but we also have this tendency towards self-orientation or just taking care of ourselves as well, which also limits our ability to create trust, reach out to others, and inspire them. Isn't that correct?
That's right. I mean, there's a wonderful model from the Trusted Advisor, which has, you know, the elements of trust in it, and it's the sole denominator in that is self-orientation, in that it has a huge amount of power over whether or not people trust us. And so the more self-oriented we are, the less people are going to trust us.
Isn't that interesting?
And I think about that a lot, and I use that quite a bit in coaching when there's a dynamic where trust is lacking. And I'll simply ask, let's talk about the self-orientation. So are you in this relationship for you? Are you in this relationship for the other person or for the relationship as a whole? Because if self-preservation is your goal, your self-orientation is high, and trust is going to go nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And the self-preservation is quite prevalent.
Right. Right. Well, we all want to keep our jobs.
Yeah.
We all want to
achieve. And so, you know, Doug Conant said something like this before, and he's a CEO of Campbell Super, just retired. And he said, you know, a lot of leaders are very comfortable with what they want to get, but less so around what they want to give, less clear about what they want to give.
Mm-hmm.
Self-orientation is really a driven thing from inside, but the counterintuitive part of it is that when we know we can be more self or outward-oriented towards others, we actually get exactly, or at least we get more of what we actually wanted in the first place than when we just focus on ourselves.
It's so true. And that's a great point. I love the quote. I may have to use that with full attribution, of course. That's a wonderful quote.
Yeah, I love that quote. I try to quote it both 3 or 4 times a show.
Well, there you go. It works. I think one of the things that trips us up about authenticity is that we feel that it shows weakness.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, it takes a lot of confidence to show authenticity. And it takes a lot of confidence to say, I don't know. It takes a lot of confidence to be open. In a way, again, that's an intentional and strategic, and it's really about who we are. And so, you know, I think of, you know, there's that great expression that, sometimes people will say that those who have presence are comfortable in their own skin. And they're comfortable being weak when they don't know. You know, they're comfortable, you know, saying something that might not go over so great, but is important to be said. And if you think about it, I try to think about who do I think role models really help us, right? Who does that really well that I don't think is weak at all, but man, they don't know something, they are confident to say they don't. Mm-hmm. And it really has a lot of power over me.
Well, you know, another fascinating part for me on this is I've met some really charismatic leaders in my life, but for some reason you just didn't know how far you could trust them because, frankly, they thought they were the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Mm-hmm.
And really a lot of charisma, meaning, you know, it was fun to talk to them or they're entertaining or they can engage you for a while, but over time it starts to reveal, if you peel it back a little bit, that there's just no other space for anyone except for themselves, and it's very hard to connect or engage or really have anything beyond a friendly or, you know, entertaining conversation.
Isn't it interesting that you say that? Because you can almost feel yourself orienting around them differently, back to that friend versus foe.
Mm.
You can't quite get them in the friend bucket.
And boy, that's an interesting way to bring it back.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking as we were talking, because, you know, I was sitting in a panel where I was listening to two CEOs speak a couple months ago, and it was to a group of young entrepreneurs, and one of them, and both very successful, one of them very open to saying what he knew and what he didn't know and where he had struggled. The other one came across as, listen, I have figured this stuff out. Just do what I tell you, and it's going to, you'll be fine. And I just watched people where the questions went.
Yeah.
Right? The questions went not to the guy who said he had all the answers, but the one who said he didn't have all the answers.
Yeah.
Because that's who they felt safe asking the question of.
You know, it's a wonderful reflection. I was speaking with a group yesterday and asked them, how do people feel being around you? What would those people say after being mm-hmm. around you? You know, and if you're so focused just on yourself, how will that relate to the work and the way you want to contribute going forward?
Yeah.
It's a lot to think about.
It is. Well, here's the great thing about presence. I always make this promise to everybody is that you don't have to do all of this stuff. There isn't an 18-point plan that you have to get perfectly right. You know, you can take one or two of these action items and work on them, and it has great impact because there's a lot of power behind all of it.
Yeah. You know, as part of this conversation, I would be remiss if we didn't acknowledge that you also wrote a little bit about social media in the book around and what it has to do with our presence. It certainly has changed the way we communicate. What are some words of advice you have on how we should use this medium, or maybe what we should stay clear of in order to maintain a professional or an executive presence?
Well, I will tell you, I wish I had written more about it. So the book, you know, in the lag behind publishing, the book came out last year, and then it was about a year before that when I completed writing it. So if I do an updated version, I will write a lot more about social media, too, because I wrote a chapter about it, but it really would have warranted more than one chapter. Mm-hmm. So I think social media has a great rewards in terms of presence, and it has some serious drawbacks we've got to be careful of. Mm-hmm. On the reward side, I believe that social media supports authenticity. The cultural norms of social media are more intimate. They're more self-revealing. They're more casual.
Yeah.
You know, we know this when somebody comes on Facebook and does sort of these, like, staid corporate propaganda types of posts, or sort of like, oh, you know, tell me something real, because that's how we talk in social media. It's very different. So there's an opening there for people to get more real, to if you're a leader, to have your people know you. I mean, I was talking to a partner in a big consulting firm, a global consulting firm, and he said, you know, I started doing this blog, and not on the company website. I did it on my own, and it's changed the way these thousands of people all over the world who report up in my chain see me.
Mm.
Because I just discuss things. He's like, I can't believe how it's taken off.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that through social media. Now, here's the rub, of course. It has to be, whatever you do on social media has to be consistent with the brand that you want to communicate in the world. You can't have, you know, there's a record, right? You can't have five different personas out there competing.
Yes.
You know, you are who you are.
Yeah, I love that as well. And a lot of compelling research around social media in terms of, if you want to be successful in this medium, again, it cannot be self-oriented. It has to really be outward-focused. Share the limelight. Share great successes of others if you want to be successful in this medium as well.
It's a lot of social media, especially Twitter, for example, is about being magnanimous. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's all these kind of ratio rules that every tweet you put out, you know, five should be about, you know, somebody else and only one about yourself. And I don't know what the magic number is these days. I just know that you need to talk about other people more than you talk about yourself.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, even if you see, you know, the prolific Twitter personalities or social media personalities like Deepak Chopra, for example, who probably has millions of people following him. I'm one of them because I find him fascinating. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of his stuff is about other people's work.
It is. It is. It's fun stuff.
Absolutely.
So it's an interesting thing, and there's a warning in there, but there's also a way of saying this is a great way, a direct line, if you will, of communicating with people in a way that can be very transparent, show the vulnerability that you talked about before, and to be able to demonstrate your empathy.
Yeah, and have people understand what your brand is, you know, and what
yeah.
you want to be in the world. You know, so, you know, brand gets negative connotations because it seems self-promoting and overly personally aggressive, I suppose. But there's another way to think of it, which is, what is a lasting impression? A brand is really a lasting impression. So what is the impression that you're leaving people with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great question. It's a great question. And how does that represent who I really am, right? And if I'm creating the right type of presence out there.
Yeah, so I talk about Twitter a lot because I actually love Twitter. And mm-hmm. if you would have asked me 2.5 years ago, I would have said, I don't understand why anyone in their right mind is on Twitter.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I've become a complete convert, and it's because I've seen the smaller communities that have developed out of it.
Yeah.
And it's a way for me to talk to readers in my book all over the world and to have an intimate exchange. It's a way for me to promote people's work that I really believe in and like and to build a community that wouldn't exist otherwise. And so,
yeah.
you know, and I encourage people to kind of step into their discomfort with social media. You know, if you're above a certain age, this stuff didn't come naturally to us.
Yeah.
And so, you know, lean into the sharp edges and see if you just try something, and you might be surprised.
I totally agree. I totally agree. Well said. You know, when we come back, I really hope we get a moment, perhaps, to talk about the inspirational aspect of this book. We've talked about the other two, but we do have to take a quick break. For Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, this is Max Brown and Roy Saunderson reminding you to keep it real. We'll be right back with our guest, Christy Hedges. Don't go away.
Get the news on our shows and other happenings by following us on Twitter. Find us at VoiceAmericaTRN or Twitter.com/VoiceAmericaTRN.
The next generation of employees is more sophisticated about recognition. They want to make a difference to their organizations, to their environment, and to their world. Rideau offers a full suite of recognition and reward solutions tailored to meet our clients' needs strategically, technologically, and globally. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about: getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. I'm Roy Saunderson and Max Brown, and our guest today, Christy Hedges, the author of The Power of Presence, unlock your potential to influence and engage others. And Christy, as I we certainly, number one, we've enjoyed being in your presence and having you on the show today. And I always find the great shows go by so fast.
Yeah, this one definitely went fast, so thank you.
Well, thank you. And there's just one more element I know we haven't had a chance to talk about yet, and that's this whole idea about being inspirational and communicating to build and motivate followership. Can you share a little bit more about that for our listeners, please?
Sure. Well, so inspirational, you know, is usually where people start in the discussion of presence, which is the outer manifestation of our intentions and the connections we want to build. And so I purposely put it at the end because unless you have those other two pieces, then the inspirational part is window dressing. And so, but it is important, right? So the piece that I talk about with inspirational is once you know those things, you know, how do you become more inspiring in the lives of other people as a leader and, you know, as a community leader or as a friend, whatever you want it to mean. And I talk about a couple different things. One of them is language, and language matters. We know that. The way that we say things orients people towards us. You know, being declarative about what we want to see in the world can be an inspiring way that we, you know, touch other people. You know, just simply, you know, being able to say declarations, to set them, to be able to say, you know, I will do this. You know, I will change this. It creates, you know, an energy field around us, if you will, so people orient themselves differently to what we have to say. But we're so used to, you know, using limiting language, you know, I think I might, or I'll try my best, or if everything goes, you know, perfectly, then I'll do it, that we waste these, we squander these opportunities to be more inspirational to those around us, especially the ones that we're leading, again, that we could put into play.
Wow, some good captures there. So how do you remind people of these declarative, you know, visionary purpose kind of things that we want in life without being boring and repetitive?
Well, I would argue it's not really boring because, you know, we don't hear it that much. And as a matter of fact, when we do hear it, we sort of sit up a little straighter. Like, oh, wow, I would say, you know, you knew those. If you think about, you know, when you're, you know, a manager in a company, or, you know, when and you have a young person who's just come into work for you, if these declarations can be used by anyone at any time. If you have a 22-year-old who walks into your office and says, "I will change the way that this process works in our office," you're thinking that kid's going to stand out. You know, so when we're in our head, we think, oh, gosh, I could never say that. That sounds too bold. But the way we receive it is very differently. And so, you know, we really root for people who are declarative and set bold goals and bold vision. But it's also thinking of ourselves differently. We all carry the ability to be visionary. You know, you don't have to be an icon of a large company to be a visionary. You can be a visionary as a manager in your department. You can be a visionary as a 22-year-old who just gets in and sees things differently. You know, the trick is to acknowledge yourself as having that capacity and to share it and to communicate in a way that makes other people want to get on board.
Okay, so you talk about language being important and making these positive declarations, but you've got to be careful not to lose the credibility, and I know you talk about that in the book. Can you share how we can get around that so we don't lose the credibility of these important visionary statements?
Well, sure. I mean, first of all, you have to be able to achieve them. So, you know, I can say that I want to change the U.S. congressional system today on, you know, the 16th of November, but, you know, you guys know that I don't have the power to do that right now. So that's probably not going to get me very far in terms of seeming as a visionary. But I could say, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to start a social media campaign to change the expectations that we have for how, you know, decision-making is getting done around a local issue. Right? I can do that.
Yeah.
And so that might be something that I have the power to affect. So it's important that you can do it, so no question. I mean, the other part of it is that we have to acknowledge when we don't meet the mark. And so, you know, I speak to a lot of CEO groups, and so they'll often say, well, that's all great. I'm not going to stand up in front of my whole company and say, we're going to do this, because what if we don't? You know, then I'll lose all credibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so I argue with them that, you know, you don't lose credibility for failing. You lose credibility for hiding.
Mm.
And so if you never acknowledge it again, and it just, you know, everything goes under, you try to sweep it under the carpet and pretend like it never happened, and we've been in organizations where that's the case, yes, you lose a lot of credibility. If you make a declaration and you don't hit it and you get up in front of the team and you say, listen, we got 80% of our goal. Here's what I could have done better. Here's what the team could have done better. Here's what we're going to do next time. You know, no one's looking at that leader going, oh, what a failure.
Yeah. Because you're also making a declaration at the same time.
Yeah. And you know, people want to be led. I mean, we want visionary leadership. We want inspiration. Right. We're asking for it.
And that's why we need to give it. And I'm, you know, we're getting down to the last few minutes here on the show. And I want to make sure, Christy, that you have a chance to be able to tell our listeners where they can reach out to learn more about your great work.
Absolutely. So probably the most direct place, because it links to everything else, is my blog, which is ChristyHedges.com. And that's ChristyHedges. I'm on Twitter at Christy Hedges. Facebook, I have a page called Power of Presence. And now I'm on LinkedIn as Christy Hedges. So those are several ways to find me.
Wonderful, wonderful. Glad that you could share those with our listeners. And I just thought, you know, as we get to these final minutes here, if there was one final thought or maybe some piece of advice that you would probably give to our listeners on the power of presence, what would you say to them?
Well, I would say there are a couple of things. I mean, one is, and I said this earlier, but it's really important that people understand it, is you don't have to do all of this. It doesn't require a wholesale change of your personality. You can do all of it if you're an introvert. You can do it. You can do it if you're an extrovert. You can do it no matter where you are in your career, no matter where you are in your life. You can take a couple of things that work for you and try to affect those, what feels feels the most like you and have great effect. And so it's not about being perfect. It's about making the effort and working through some areas that have great impact and resonance in our lives and the lives of others.
And what have you learned personally from this whole investigation and great work in your book on presence?
I've learned a lot. That's a gigantic question. So one of the things I will say that continues to reinforce a lesson for me is that, you know, in writing the book, I tried to practice what I preached. I tried to, you know, be very authentic about the book, express a lot of vulnerability. I was very open to what were challenges for me. I talk about the reasons that, you know, I was so interested in the first place is because there were a lot of the issues that I was working on leading a company and things that I had struggled with. And so even in writing, I remember when I got the first draft of the book back from my editor, I thought, oh gosh, should I have really said all this stuff? You know, I was imagining people, you know, reading it. And it was really intimidating, and I did it anyway.
Well,
and time again, that is what people come back to me and say. Like, I was so glad you shared those stories. The same thing happened to me. I felt like I could understand what you were saying because you had talked about your own background. And so, again, just reinforces the message that this stuff does have resonance and that, you know, even with something like a book, the lessons still come through.
Well, it certainly resonated with us today, and we're grateful to have had you on the show today, Christy.
Well, thank you guys so much. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you, Christy. It was a real pleasure. Thank you.
Well, certainly we want to make sure that our listeners tune in to our next show, where Max and I will be continuing our discussion on building relationships, inspiring greatness, and creating workplaces where people can thrive. Max and I welcome and encourage your comments and suggestions, so go to rideau.com/radio, that's rideau.com/radio, and give us your feedback. Tell us why you listen to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. We'll send you a small token of appreciation. Also, check out all of our shows that are now listed on Rideau's Real Recognition Radio Library at rideau.com. Thanks again for listening to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. For more information about the Recognition Management Institute, you can also visit us at rideau.com. I'm Roy Saunderson and Max Brown, and until next time, we're reminding you, keep it real.
Thank you again for tuning in Real Recognition Radio. Please join Roy Saunderson and Max Brown again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. for more motivational tips to help your employees perform better. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.